and Harry, we want to say goodnight to you.
To another episode on Duan Marrero Podcast. This is your host, Duan Marrero. Joining me today is the one and only Jim D'Lo himself. I've been waiting to pod all week, so I couldn't wait. I think we're on episode 186. We're emerging to almost 200 episodes before 30. That was a personal milestone.
When are you going to get it right after 187, huh?
It's up there. I mean, hey, 200 before 30, and then we could hit a new milestone, but nevertheless, Spike Albrecht hit me up last week, and we were small talking via text, and I'm like, hey, might as well go in-depth, come up to the studio, talk to Jimmy and I. So welcome, Spike Albrecht.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys, man. Thanks for having me.
Good morning.
Spike, pull that mic to your face, just closer to your mouth a little bit, so that the producer over there isn't waving, gesticulating wildly.
Gotcha.
Hey, did we thank our producer yet, Robert Aguirre?
Rob, welcome back from Europe, brother.
Robert went to
Thanks
Europe.
Thanks for having me back, man. You see the domino effect. Jimmy went, now Rob gets to go to Europe.
Well, you cut the cloth there by, what, didn't you travel around for years?
I didn't like that 10 to 12-hour flight and trying to accommodate to their everyday lifestyle. And
How'd you like your knees jammed up into the seat right in front of you?
That was one of the complaints that I left on Yelp. when some clubs try to put me on Spirit Airlines, the disrespect, right?
That's crazy.
Spike, you notice how serious he is, man?
Yeah.
The mic went on, and he just became...
I know. I didn't even know we were going.
He's, like, so serious, all I want to do is screw around.
Yeah.
So it makes a nice back and forth, because I like to make fun of him, and he's like man about the world now, man.
Well,
he's
traveling. Purchase the third day of Lollapalooza tickets, so...
Oh, boy.
Only the third day, though, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to go Friday. I want to see Kendrick Lamar, but Thursday I'm open for a Diplo, so I could get in the mosh pit. So,
it's dangerous.
You know what? A guy like me in the mosh pit, I could go in there and do whatever I want. No one's going to see. But your head sticking above that mosh pit, they know exactly what you're up to in there. You know what I mean?
My girlfriend wants to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Lana Del Rey.
But then you better start working a little bit harder.
Right. So that's why we purchased the Sunday. But yeah, I want to see Diplo. Huge fan of Diplo.
Spike Albrecht, man. Region guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Crown Point through and through.
You grew up there, went to high school there, and then left for Michigan and came back.
Yeah.
Purdue and all that.
Yep. I mean, two older brothers, grew up CP, sports through and through. I graduated in 2011. I actually went to prep school for 1 year before Michigan. So I went out to the East Coast, out near Boston. To do what they call a postgraduate year. 10, 12 years ago, prep school wasn't super common.
Bosco wasn't around, I don't think, when Spike was coming out.
It wasn't.
Lalamere was, but they weren't what they are today, that's for sure.
I honestly, if Bosco was around, I probably would have ended up there, just being, so close to home. But my brother was playing out at Brown in Rhode Island, and they were recruiting me, but I needed to get my test scores up. I'm not as smart as my brother. So I went and did a PG year there and tried to just get a little more exposure and get my scores up, and then next thing I know, Michigan came calling. So it worked out for the better.
So who in the house when you were younger, like, who was the main, like, basketball influence, and where'd you get your talent? Who was, like, saying, hey, this is cool, you need to play this?
My dad. My dad grew up in Gary. He went to Lew Wallace.
That's crazy. Yeah. I would have never thought that.
Yeah, he's
hey, man, it's all
OG.
Gary or EC or Hammond. There's no other beginning place.
For
maybe
sure.
A little bit of Whiting, but only for like 4,000 people.
Yeah, so he's a huge basketball junkie. He played, he went to Vincennes for a couple years, and then he ended up at Purdue Cal back when it was Purdue Cal. But he put a ball in our hands, you know, from the time I was 2 or 3 years old. And then having older brothers, just growing up playing with them, you know, it was battles all day. In
Nerf
the driveway.
Hoop all the way into the driveway.
Nerf hoop, driveway, many hospital visits with, you know, bloody noses and split lips. But I just love the game. You know, hanging out with my brothers, getting to hang out with them and their friends and play, it just grew on me.
Do you understand that? I love to just love the game.
You know what? I was going to read a column, a headline, and I want you to elaborate and ask Spike some questions.
Is it something I wrote? If it is, no, I disavow all things.
This was April 9th, 2013, when this said Spike Albrick, freshman, comes out of nowhere to explode in the national title game. And it says Michigan freshman guard Spike Albrick came out of nowhere to explode in the national title game against Louisville on Monday night. I remember watching that game. And it says Albrick was ranked in the 2012 class 178th and certainly made the most of his spike in minutes on Monday. Given playing time in the first half against the Cardinals, he erupted for 17 points while going 6-for-7 from the floor and 4-for-4 from the long distance.
What happened that night?
I got an opportunity in the first half. Trey Burke got 2 fouls, and that was Coach B's deal, is if you get 2 fouls, you're sitting the rest of the half. You know, and I've always been, a lot of people like, how the heck did you do that? You know, I've always been super confident, right, because I know I put in the time and I put in the work, and I've, you know, I'm someone I've taken pride in being in those moments, those pressure situations with the bright lights, and, you know, having 2 older brothers, I was never afraid of anybody. So when I got my chance going up against, you know, Russ Smith, Peyton Siva, I just went out there and tried to be aggressive and play confident, and, you know, I was able to knock down some open shots, and it just kind of spiraled.
If they had 1 close-up on your face, they had a million that
night.
I remember even my wife's like, isn't that the guy a couple years ago? Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
That's him. What year was that, 2012, 13?
2013.
Mm-hmm. And let's just get a couple names. Coach B is Coach Berline.
Yeah, Coach Beeline, yep.
Yeah, Beeline, I'm sorry. And he spoke at the sportsmanship dinner 1 year. And it was really exciting when he came in.
Did he?
Yeah, he got awesome. Everybody talking to him. And then your older brother's names are?
My oldest brother's name is Chachi. And then my middle brother's name is Steven. So we got Chachi and Spike. We're a little bit dysfunctional.
All right, he's going to ask how to spell Chachi for the graphic. And I'm not going to just put you know, whatever you think is
however
right.
You want to spell it, dude. It's all good.
So you came out of Crown Point. You played for Clint Swan. What was that like?
I did. I love Swanee.
You got to look up there at the camera.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. No, Swan's my guy. Great guy, player's coach. You know, he pretty much gave me the keys to the car, you know, sophomore year. You know, I think nowadays a lot of people want to complain and hate on certain coaches at all levels. I'm not just talking Crown Point here. But, like, my thing is, you know, he gives you an opportunity. You got to make the most of it. And if you're good enough, you're going to play. And that's what I tell parents nowadays who talk about their kids. I still do a lot of basketball training. You know, I love helping kids, working on player development. But Swanee was great. I mean, gave me a ton of leeway, pushed me. You know, he gets after you and holds you accountable. But that's how I grew up, and that's what I respected as him as a coach. You know, he helps you get better as a player and as a person.
He's not universally liked, and part of it is his old school mentality. I know it. I like him. I get along with him really well. But that is old school. Say, you know, him at Crown Point, Pischard, Andrean, Radke, all wherever he goes, they carry an old school mentality. Are you an old school player?
I think so. I mean, just growing up, again, growing up in Indiana, you know, Two older brothers, like, I come from, you know, the mold where you got to earn it. Like, you got to work hard. Nothing's given to you. Everything's earned. And I think Swanee, you know, he embraces that mentality. And if he sees that you work and you put in the time, you know, he'll give you more leash and more leeway. But I think a lot of kids nowadays just feel a sense of entitlement, and they haven't done anything. They haven't earned anything. I know, you know, the way that I grew up with my dad and my brothers, like, you had to bust your tail, and you weren't just looking for pats on the back.
Entitlement. Yeah, that's his favorite word right there.
You know, they don't be held accountable.
Yeah, man.
I always tell Jimmy that. They don't play last night. They get 5 minutes, and then you go on their Twitter, they're transferring mm-hmm. to one of the local schools around here,
yeah.
Classic, and they're losing. So I'm like, it's pointless. But, yeah, kids aren't held accountable at all.
You know, it's so weird that you guys say that, is that I'm dealing with that, too, is like, you know, who's accountable and so forth. But you've been at Purdue for a while now, right?
I have. So I played there 1 year. I did my fifth year there. And then I coached there for a year as well as a grad assistant. And Coach Payne's the same way.
What was his philosophy like at Purdue? What did he preach to you guys, from the players on to the staff?
I mean, buy-in, like buying into the team, the system, you know, being a part of something bigger than yourself. And, I mean, when you walk into Mackey Arena, I know you guys have both been there, like, defense lives here.
Yeah, he got season tickets.
Yeah, yeah. Sweet.
So every once in a while when you see him on Instagram, he's there on my tickets.
I've known that. So I was coaching there a couple years ago, and I look up in the stands, and Rico's walking down. I was like, oh, yeah, good seats.
I did.
No, but Paints, you know, he's a tough dude. Like, played for Gene Cady, and I remember coming from Michigan, and Coach Beilein's awesome, but he's a lot more, I don't know, like a lot more skill based and offensive minded. You know, he's got this beautiful two guard, and everything flows and
cerebral.
Yeah,
he's been described as cerebral,
and they're both great.
Yeah,
like, you know, in their own way. But practices were a little bit lighter, and, you know, when I got to Purdue for my fifth year, it was like all-out war at Purdue. I was like...
That was the before the AC, right? Because I remember going to team camp in Purdue, you didn't have no goddamn heat. I mean, AC in the summer.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was... And then even the strength and conditioning program, like, you're running hills, like, you're lifting like a dog. So I think that's why Purdue every year, I mean, like, they're tough. They may not always get the best players, like the four or five stars, they're starting to, but like, they play hard. You know, when I was at Michigan, like, you did not want to go into Purdue, no matter how good they were. It was always going to be a dogfight, and that's Coach Payne. Like, he instills that in his team.
So, you know, obviously, you know, you get it from any guy who played at Lew Wallace in what, the 60s or something like that. Yeah, he's a tough guy, right? You get it from your dad. Your brothers are beating on you all these years. You play for Coach Painter and coach with him. And now you're in a world of college basketball that's changing rapidly. I have regularly every other week during the season or all winter and fall, I have Don Fisher on.
Yeah.
The voice of IU basketball. And it's funny because you put Fish on, and in the beginning he doesn't want to talk about. And then all of a sudden he just opens up. He's so critical of NILs. You know, the UCLA and USC coming into the Big Ten, what is that going to do? It's kind of breaking down. I get from Fish that he thinks it's breaking down the integrity of college basketball. Mm-hmm. Do you?
NIL?
And just the many changes that are going on, the dollar being so big, NILs, the transfer portal, the national conferences, all that's coming at us at once. It's not like when you played for Michigan your freshman year, and certainly not when your dad was coming up watching all these guys play.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, and I'm not like an old timer, so I don't want to be like super critical, but I think you're definitely losing a sense of like the purity of the game, right? And that's what I really learned from being at Purdue on the coaching side, is you start to see the business side of things. Like, it's a billion-dollar industry.
I think a lot of coaches, too, don't like to they get intimidated with younger up-and-coming coaches, and it's more of the relationship base. Like, this guy may not be as connected with the players, but if he did, you know, 10 years in the hole at JUCO or went to Cal College and you guys have a tight bond, you know, just the nature of the business, you're going to take that coach even though he can't connect with the player. So I laugh about it all the time.
Let's take that one. That Boomer sits in your seat, Boomer, the coach over here at PNW. I can't remember his last name.
Is Roberts. Boomer Roberts.
Roberts. He's got like one name around here. So Boomer Roberts, and he sits in there. And once in a while, I'll interview him, and he'll talking about, you know, dealing with guys' emotional issues and giving them hugs and being the, like, the support or dad figure, friend figure, whatever they need. And I'm like, really, man? That is not how I understand the coach, the coach-player relationship, man. Get out there, do your job, shut up, and go home and deal somewhere else with your problems. Boomer's like, you cannot do that now.
No.
That relationship in and of itself, I can't quite get my hands around.
For sure. I don't know how head coaches do it these days, but like even me as a GA at Purdue, and it kind of goes back to, you know, to that word entitlement, but like you're just working guys out, and they have no idea like the amount of work it takes to be successful at this level, right? And they think just because they're getting a few extra shots up before after practice, like they should be in the rotation and they should be playing more minutes or they should be starting. But you got to be very careful in the way that you talk to these kids nowadays. And
it's a sensitive culture too.
Oh,
it's very sensitive. You see, Jim Boeheim steps down, like the Jay Wrights of the world.
Coach Beilein, that's why he got out.
Yeah, I was gonna say Boeheim, Beilein,
Coach K.
You know, at some point, it's like, you know what? I can't relate.
It's not so much now the players. It's like the dad who's 37. Let's say John Morant's dad, right? I'll address that. You see him on the sidelines, and he's acting like if he's young, juvenile, in his early 20s. But he's like, man, that's a parent. That's John Morant's dad.
Yeah.
And so that's the culture now of recruiting kids. Is like you're recruiting their parents too, which is – bizarre. And you have parents running their kids' social media accounts, and
it's a
different landscape, because when I overhear a lot of coaches try to recruit a kid and the mom texts them back via DM like, hey, I saw you hit up my kid, it's a whole different landscape and is much sensitive now when it comes to recruiting.
Well, and then to build off that with recruiting, man, like the NIL piece comes into play, and
what would you think your NIL value would be after your performance in the national championship?
You don't want to think about
that.
Yeah,
no, that makes me sick. I'd been buying coffee for sure, at least.
Did you come up with just your own coffee, by the way?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did.
Man, you know, now he knows the rules.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll be a regular, now that he's back in the region.
Yeah.
But don't ever come here with just one coffee,
I know.
Please.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, I know for a fact.
You was getting attention. Like, you was getting a lot of notoriety. Like, social media wasn't as, you know, I'm pretty sure your phone was blowing up, but when I was coming up at DePaul and, you know, underground, I didn't have as much distractions. But now these kids they have so much access.
Oh.
But I want to know what you think your NIL value will be, and would you still be on the same path today with NIL and all the social media access that people could have with you?
No, I mean, I think, I don't know, like, a number. I think I would have been able to make easily at least a couple hundred grand. Like, and that's not tooting my own horn. I know right now what kids are making, and, like, there's certain schools in the Big Ten, in the country, if you are on scholarship and you come to, you know, wherever, and you graduate, you're walking out with 50K or 100K. And that's from, you know, the university collective. That's not even, like, side deals that you'd be doing.
Right.
And I know I'd have been doing a lot of side deals.
Yeah.
Right, especially because, after that game.
Because your dad went to Wallace, and you're a hustler,
I'm
right?
Trying to,
yeah, basically. You know, I see the dangers of this, but I have the same argument with Don Fisher all the time. You know, he's old school, I'm old school, but I'm also a businessman.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, I remember covering all these NCAAs, and you go down on at the tournament, Sweet 16, whatever, and you walk down there, and you realize all these people are making a ton of money off of this game that's going to come on, except for the 10 guys running up and down that are the show. So,
well, the argument be like, Jim, some callers, you know, in the past be like, well, Jim, the school's paying for the education. They shouldn't get paid. What's your thoughts when they say that? Or how do you break it down for someone who thinks like
that? So I'm twofold. First of all, like, I obviously walked away with the free education, two of them. I got my master's degree. Awesome. I'm super thankful for it. But I also didn't have any money in my pocket when I left, right? So whereas a normal student can work a side job or whatever and walk away with some money, you know, I probably had $4,000 or $5,000 in debt on, like, credit cards, just, you know, from paying bills. We got a stipend back then, but it wasn't a lot. And I'm not trying to sit here and whine. We were treated like kings. I had a great education. But hell yeah, if I could, you know, come out of school with 150, 200 grand in my pocket, like, that would open up doors for me, you know. And here's the thing. With some of these kids coming out with that type of money, I just hope that someone is helping them navigate it. And,
well, how do you coach that? Right?
Yeah.
You know, they're not being held accountable. And
no.
They're walking in. Their vehicle is better than the coach's car.
Oh, some of them are making more money than the assistants. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you got kids making $400,000 or $500,000.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
a lot of money.
And I see the change and the negative parts to that, but I also see the positives.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's, you know, for so long there's been so much imbalance. Like you shoot to the top of it. I mean, everybody knows who you are. You should be able to turn that into some jerseys, into some appearances, and the way, you know, you present well. I mean, that would have been a time and a moment where, yeah, make some money, help your family. Mom and dad have to pay all that money and drive you around to all these tournaments and everything.
Yeah.
All that stuff should come back. I mean, just think, you know, you're able to help your mom or something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, hey, a Bowman Academy Duane Morrell jersey, right, as a collector.
Oh, in a heartbeat. I'd buy one, just one.
Yeah, I appreciate
that. Be hanging up, right?
But having that opportunity and luxury, more kids now are inclined to entrepreneurship. Right,
sure.
They know that they're an LLC by default. That's a whole different approach, and it's scary because they're way more advanced now with technology, and they utilize it. And so for the older coaches trying to adapt, like Coach Woodson, I tip my hat off to Coach Woodson because he's still able
to
recruit.
Man, can he recruit, by the way?
Hey.
Him and his staff.
I'm not real happy about that, but he can recruit. Jeez.
Yeah, and they look at that as a challenge too, right, because you have to double down. Most coaches who are used to coaching a certain way as times change and a lot more players get access to from people from the outside of basketball team, coaches have to double down and buy in to the new way of college basketball. But it's fun, though, for the most part. It's very
so
fun.
So, once again, if you guys are listening to the podcast, this is DeJuan's podcast. He calls me in from
time
to time.
Jimmy's the co-host.
Yeah, I guess I'm
He's
a co-host
pioneer.
Now, man.
Yeah.
I used to leave right away because I tried to make hot yoga, but anymore I'm like, he gets good guests. I think I'll stick around. But this is the DeJuan Marrero podcast, episode 187.
And this is Jimmy D'Lo studio, allowing me to produce it here. So, and Rob's in the back in the net, so I appreciate him.
And if it's being recorded on May 31st, a Wednesday here, I think it's about 9:26. So actually, we're basically just use the studio to record it, and we just run it live, and I had to tell Spike not to swear. But if you are driving around right now and you happen to be catching the recording and you want to call in and say something to Spike Albrick, it's 219-845-1100. You could call or text to that number. But once again, if you're listening later, none of that's going to matter. Spike, what are you doing now?
I am in franchise sales, so I'm in the business world. I essentially work for a group that partners with different brands, so we partner with the franchisors. Then it's my job to speak with candidates, so like investors and potential franchisees, and I'll pitch them on the different brands and, you know, see if it's a good fit, and if they want to move forward, I'll introduce them to the brand founders, and then we kind of go from there.
How'd you get involved in that?
Through a guy I knew at Michigan. A Michigan alum, he played football there. We'd kind of gone back and forth over the years. He'd kind of mentored me, and then as I was transitioning out of the basketball world, I knew I wanted to be in business, wanted to be in sales, and it's a little bit more entrepreneurial, which is what I like. I didn't want to just have your typical 9-to-5 where I'm in a cubicle all day. So he started connecting me with some folks in the industry, and the more I learned about the business and in the space, I really enjoyed it, and been doing that now for a little while. So
what do you say about that? What do you say about his evolution coming out of basketball, going into business?
Well, the question would be, what's that network like going to Purdue and then going to Michigan, right? I just have a DePaul network and
Morehead State.
And a Morehead State and then in Kentucky. I mean, that network's great, but it's not as premium as a Purdue and a Michigan network.
Yeah, and I mean, not a knock. But no, I think that's something too that I would tell kids, like high schoolers and kids in college, especially those who aren't going to go on and play in the NBA. That's something I did a really good job of, is networking and going to those, you know, career fairs and, you know, staying after to talk to fans and sign autographs and things like that. You know, my dad used to always tell me, like, be good to people on the way up because you're going to see them on the way down. So I was fortunate that I did a good job of that in college. And those people, they remember that. And as they get older, they're successful business people. They want to help, you know, the younger up-and-coming generation. So I've, you know, that's a skill, like continuing to network and stay in contact with people. I've done a good job of that. Even when I was in the basketball world, you know, I'd help people if they needed tickets somewhere or whatever, just because, you know, it's one of those things, like what goes around comes around. And the alumni network at both Michigan and Purdue is very powerful, and people love their universities.
You know, Jimmy went to Cal Berkeley.
Did you really?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I haven't talked to anybody from my Cal Berkeley. Well, I have never mind that because I wasn't all that well behaved there and just whatever.
He was a menace.
I was a boxer.
Okay.
Hey, that's why this nose does not exist anymore. But I do know the value of a high-level education. It can get you into doors that sometimes maybe are a little bit sticky.
Yeah.
And you throw the Berkeley or the Michigan out there, and they tend to lubricate up a little bit.
Absolutely.
And I know that, but what many listeners and viewers would be interested in is, like, all right, Spike Albrecht comes up. Everybody knows that he looks like a coach, a future coach. And then you're coaching. You got Bayline. You got Clint Swan. You got Matt Painter pedigree. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you're like the guy to be a major college coach. And now you've shifted off and gone into a different stream. Have you thought that maybe I'll come back, or is the coaching pool even there?
No. I'm done coaching, at least at the college level, or, you know, trying to pursue that in like the NBA. You know, I think sometime down the road I could see myself coaching my kids or something. But you're exactly right. Like, that's what everybody told me when I first came out of college. They're like, you're a coach. And they kind of just, like, talked me into it. I'm glad I tried it, because I didn't want to regret it in 10 or 15 years. But the thing that I was telling Rico before we got started is, it's like, I love basketball because I love the game, and I love playing, I love competing. And then from the coaching side, like, I liked helping guys get better and work on their game. And then I love the strategy, the X's and O's. Coaching nowadays is so much different. It's such a business, and it's all about recruiting and who do you know, and breaking deals with AAU coaches and agents and all that stuff that necessarily isn't my strengths. Like, I was good at basketball because I was high IQ. Like, I thought I was going to be a good coach because I really understood the game, and I felt like I connected well with players. The business piece of the coaching industry is what really turned me off, and all, obviously it's a grind as well. I mean, you spend a ton of time. You're always away from your family. You're always chasing the next job. There's never any stability. So I was like, did it for a couple of years, and then I just knew it was time to get out.
I don't know you that well, but I'm going to call BS on that. And you can't say the real word, because we are recording on AM radio. I'm just saying, here it is, May 31st of 2023, that just hearing you say that and how much you love the game and you're in the business world, I'm just projecting that maybe you'll come back to basketball at some point. That's just from the outside. The cheap seats, and that means nothing.
No. Yeah, I mean, that's a
What are the challenges for an up-and-coming guy who goes through the pathway you do, but they want to continue to linger on and continue to stay there once their GA is done? What advice would you give them now as they're trying to find their way in college basketball and want to be a coach? Because most young guys don't want to be a high school coach. They want to be a one-year head coach and be an associate head coach.
For sure.
But you are eternally involved, and you have so much wisdom and knowledge. What information can you give that person as they will listen to this episode?
Yeah, I would say, if you're going to do it, like, do it right away when you're young and you're fresh out of college. Like, I went and, you know, started in the business world, came back, so I was making good money, and then, you know, I started coaching when I was 27, 28, and took a massive pay cut, and you're like, dang, those checks changed quickly. So I would say start right away after your playing days, or, you know, you're done overseas, whatever it is. but also be ready to grind. Like, you got to put in the time. Like, there are no shortcuts, especially because you said it earlier with these older coaches. Like, unless you're a big-time player coming from the league or something where you can add value right away, but if you're just a regular Joe like me, like, you're not cutting steps. You know, like, they had to put in their time. They talk about being managers. They talk about this and that and, you know, riding the buses. So you got to really be ready to grind and
so
put in your time.
What's the business vision? You want to own your own startup and, take it large, or you want to help this company grow? What is it?
Yeah.
What is the long term? How old are you?
I'm 30.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
30, man.
How old are you?
29. About to be 30.
Oh, you guys are the same.
But
same
we were
era.
Same class.
But you see the attitude that we have towards the landscape of basketball. Like, I love the business part. That's why I'm able to thrive, because I could tell the younger coaches that you're not a trailblazer, because I had Marvin Ray. I played for a lot of coaches who were 50-plus, and they taught me how to mow grass. They taught me how to go to nice restaurants, and my coaches taught me how to go to Men's Warehouse and buy me a suit, where these new coaches – just show up to coach and then wonder why a kid doesn't have a ride. Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the job too, man. His energy is kind of the same from my class. Luckily, we have this platform to talk about it, but there's a lot of players who don't have the platform and don't really want to speak up about the new landscape of coaches.
Yeah.
Did you guys play each other when you were in high school?
No,
I don't think so.
I don't think
Crown Point is always a little selective with their scheduling, and they could play anybody. They weren't playing Bowman at the time, though, evidently.
Yeah, no, you guys were nasty.
We pressed 2-2-1. Yeah, all the time.
Too bad. Was that Greenwood? Who beat you in the finals?
It was Park Tudor, Trayvon Blewett, and Yogi Ferrell.
Hey, that team was loaded.
Yes.
It sucked, and I still complain about this to this day. When I was at Crown Point, we did the double round robin. So we played every team in the DAC twice.
They got rid of that.
Thank God. So we would only play like 4 or 5 games outside of conference. And like, for me, I think that hurt like guys in our area in terms of, you know, recognition and getting exposure and just playing against some of the top guys in the
state. Remember all area team? It was no better feeling than looking at that paper to see if you was a first team or second team or third team.
Like, were you first team?
I don't think that first year Marvin was upset. I don't think he allowed Mike Hutton back in the gym after he put me like second or third
Did
team.
You dirty.
Yeah. But the passion and the climate that we had in that 2012, obviously it's a huge drop off in general with basketball in this 24 class, especially in our area. And it's so many factors now that goes in to when you recruit kids, and a lot of the younger coaches have so much to learn. But I'm happy that Spike kind of emphasized it, his perspective, and that's why it's like I was kind of spoiled to have guys like you, right? Guys like Marvin Ray. My AAU coach was 65, and he instilled so much values early on where I was very spoiled, and that's why I kind of have that energy when – I kind of see people who are in leadership don't really take full advantage of their role to help younger kids.
You a leader, Spike?
I'm sorry?
Are you a leader? He's talking about leadership.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think you got to be. And sports definitely taught me that. You know, we talked about it early on. I was 2-time captain at the University of Michigan, and I'm not a cheerleader by any means. I'm not someone who's going to sit there and rah-rah and get guys going. My thing is, like, if you can't get yourself going or come ready to play, like, what the heck are you doing here?
That's a region thing, by the way. You know, my cousin that coaches the youth out in South Bend and Elkhart and all that?
Right.
He says he notices that the region guys don't come in. They're not rah-rahing like some of these other guys from downstate.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, you better get out, get your job done. And that's Marvin. That was his, you know, he wasn't a rah-rah guy. And that's the region mentality carries through in a lot of ways. That's just one of them.
Yeah.
But being a region guy, you know, how does that prep you for the business world?
I think with what I'm doing now is, like, you know, it's performance-based. So my thing is, you could say all the right things and tell people how great you're doing or, you know, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. But at the end of the day, actions speak louder than words. And I know if I'm not doing my job at a high level, I'm not getting paid and I'm not making money. So I think the region and my family has kind of prepped me with that growing up and instilled that, you know, in me, along with sports. You know, I think a lot of days, like, you know, talk is cheap. You can talk about it all you want, but at the end of the day, you got to be about it.
So you guys graduated in the same year?
2012. I was 2012.
Spike, when did you graduate? 2013?
I was 11.
You're 2011?
Yeah, I was
11. So you played against some of the same guys?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, the Brandon Dawsons of the world.
Gary, what was it like playing? Did you play Dawson?
I did not.
Gosh, you did not.
Well, the Clint Swans in that time, and, you know, we was building these, like, Brandon Dawson had his team. They didn't even play Bowman, right? But the coaches, like,
he was at Lou Wallace, right?
Yeah, but
that's your dad's alma mater. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't play Lou Wallace. I didn't get the opportunity to compete against Brandon Dawson, and Clint Swan had his own cloud over there. And it was kind of like Marvin thought that he could go in any gym and press them and win how he wants to win, until we had got that reality check freshman year. But I want to say I had the opportunity to listen to Chris Paul speak at the NBA National Basketball Players That's Association, awesome. The union. You had Derek Fisher there, Bobby Simmons, who him and I did therapy together, and Chris Paul, and you see all these personnel that allows players to actually make a living off stipends, where the Players Association is kind of just like the union Jim always talks to about, make sure what's the union right around here for the local laborers.
Laborers, we're laborers, carpenters, electricians, and iron workers are our main sponsors.
Yeah, and the players, the NBA has that, which I had no idea.
Same idea, yeah.
So I'm watching all this personnel. I'm a fly on the wall with my camera, and I'm watching all these players, these first round draftees. Just, you see the ones that come from the Big Ten, the ACC.
Yeah,
they were sitting front row in the table, and then you saw the ones who had the cases that made headlines, sat all the way in the back. That's really true. Like the Purdue's, the Duke's, they were sitting front row. But Chris Paul was 38 talking to kids who are 20. And you could see the disconnect, because they're like, man, Chris Paul is just talking. But Chris Paul's like, no, Monday nights I guarded Steve Nash. Wednesday nights I had to guard guys like Allen Iverson. I'm 38 and none of you guys can still take my position.
Yeah.
But he talked about it so much to the business part. Once you guys get to the NBA, you guys will see it has nothing to do with basketball, because a lot of you young guys are inconsistent. And he talked about the power of no, understand that you're the breadwinner, and that the window to be an NBA player is very small.
For sure.
And their stipends, so everyone in the NBA used to get $20,000 from the PA. Once you finish your first year, now the NBA amasses billions of dollars. Now everyone gets $402,000 from LeBron James all the way down. So they want players to thrive in the world, but it's the lack of accountability, your team you're around, and having a foundation.
Yeah.
But the business part, when he said that, I told Monty Williams that I'll call this guard and let him know that he'll make the NBA our playoff roster. He said, I'll make that call. And I'm like, I think that went over a lot of you guys' heads, that you guys need to know Chris Paul.
For sure.
Because he runs a lot of the NBA eternally.
He's a leader.
Yeah.
I love all the stuff that he's doing. He knows how to use his brand, that's for sure.
But he's 38, going on his
18th. Is he that old?
Yeah, going on his 18th year. But he talked about that it has little to do with basketball. And a lot of players still think it's about basketball.
Well, I think a lot of the guys who stick to, you know, like, I've had a lot of friends, I'm sure you did as well, who went and played in the NBA for however long. And there's some guys who were super talented that only lasted 4 or 5 years. You know, and then there's some guys who are on their 10th, 11th year just because they're great dudes, right? They don't cause problems. They're, you know, team guys, culture builders. They're great in the community. They have no problems, right? If you're just like a fringe guy and you're not, you know, a superstar, like, your margin for error is very, like, very little.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you were kind of referring to that.
Was a tweener, right? Like, I was undersized. You know, growing up in our 2012, Spike has a meeting at 10, so we're going to wrap it up here soon. But I was in-between guy. No one could understand what my position was. I lacked the perimeter, but I was a grinder, right? Double-double machine. And I think as you get older, there's a lot of players that's our age, Spike and our age, that's like, hey, what you doing? Getting up shots. Like, when the hell was the last time you got a contract?
Yeah.
You know, come on, my guy. Like, why are you getting up shots? It's 9 a.m., you're 28. The average league right now player is 22, 21. So, but it's the mindset. It's hard to leave playing, but there's so much more revenue around the game now.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of information that a lot of these young kids need to know going into NBA Europe, but they can't leave that I'm a basketball player. Was it a hard transition for you when, you know, you're no longer the Purdue basketball player, you're just Spike Albrick, the coach?
Not really. Like, yeah. I, you know, because I...
Your brothers were keeping you humble the whole time.
Yeah, like, I feel like I come from a pretty humble background. And I also, like, I knew I was never going to play in the NBA and, you know, go on. So, like, by the time I was done playing, I was ready. I was like, my body's torched. Like, I'm ready to move on to the next level. And also, I'll give Coach Beilein a shout-out here. Like, he did a great job at Michigan. We had some really, really good players, really talented dudes. But, like, he had the mantra, and it's the Michigan, right? The team, and, like, be a part of something bigger than yourself.
That's
right?
Awesome.
And, I mean, we had some, you know, some lottery picks, some really talented teams. We went to National Championship, Elite Eight. But, like, you were never above the team. You know, so even if you had a great game or you ride that high, like after the national championship, I'm sure I came around and was acting stupid a little bit.
How big is that piece, though? You said it. Being in corporate and in business, how much of a team?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Having humility going into those meetings and being open-minded, hearing your peers' opinions.
Absolutely. Like, I like to consider myself, you know, sounds cliche, but a lifelong learner. Like, I'm new to the franchise space. I'm humble enough to know that I don't know crap about this industry. So I reach out and seek, you know, mentorship and talk with people who are much smarter than me. And I think that's an ego thing. Like, a lot of people want to, you know, act like they know it all and they can do it all by themselves, right? Leverage your resources and the people you know, because it's only going to make you better. So
outside of Beilein and Painter and Swan that I've mentioned, any other coaches you look out and you're like, I like the way they run this thing?
At what level?
Any level. What about Tom Izzo? You like the way he does it?
I like Izzo. Izzo's a tough dude.
I like Hackett.
Iron Mountain Iron Mountain can't be that different from Lou Wallace. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, no, Izzo's a tough dude. I mean, I think you watch the way they play, like, I've played against them and I see the way he talks to these guys, and I was like when Brandon Dawson was there and Travis, right?
Yeah.
Travis Stud. I would hear the way that he was yelling at them on the court, and I was like, this dude's nuts. But I was also like, that's how I grew up. Like, I could play for this dude. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, I love watching Eric Spoelstra in the NBA, the Heat.
Video guy. I took a picture.
Yeah.
I took a video. He was a video coordinator in 95. And to be where he's at today gave me so much inspiration.
Yeah.
Like, I just love seeing that picture from the late 90s. To where he's at today, and I'm like, I'm gonna meet that guy one day. I was close when I was at the Knicks game in Miami, but I'm gonna meet that guy one day.
What do you like about his style? I mean, obviously he's going to be on an international stage right now at the NBA Finals, but what do you like about it?
I mean, I think he's done a great job of building a culture and building a style of play. Right, they don't have the best players in the league. I mean, look,
they
got Jimmy Buckets, who the Bulls let go. We messed that one up.
Why don't you bring that up again,
yeah,
by the way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Jimmy Butler fan. But, I mean, you look at the rest of their roster, I mean, Bam's solid, but, like, you got a bunch of Division II guys, undrafted guys. I mean, Duncan Robinson's out there. I played with Duncan at Michigan. But they're just tough. They're hard-nosed, blue-collar, right? Like, they go out there. They don't take crap from anybody. I mean, they're undersized. Now, they could get dog-walked versus Denver, because I think Denver's that good. But, like, every year, I mean, they're in the mix. They're always competing. And I think that's a testament to him and also Pat Riley. Like, Pat Riley's a tough dude. And
God, remember how much bunk he took for picking Spoelstra?
For
like,
sure.
People are like, what are you doing? Who is this guy's coming out of nowhere? He's like, I got it. You know, either you believe in me or you don't.
Well, and I feel like
I always liked Riley the most as an NBA coach. He was my favorite.
Yeah, he's great. I think Spoelstra, like, I think people are a little bit, I don't want to say hesitant, but they didn't realize how great of a coach he was, because when he was starting when they're having a lot of success, right? He had LeBron and D Wade. So it's like, oh, dude, you got two of the best players in the world. Anybody could win with these guys. But like now, you know, I think he's people are starting to realize how good he is, and he's starting to get, you know, his credit.
Look at this, Jimmy.
Let's see if we can pull it up. What's that?
Spo.
That's you?
No, that's Spo. That's
Coach Spo. That is?
Yeah, video coordinator.
God, what a young-looking dude, man.
Yeah, same organization.
The reason that he brings that up is that's what DeJuan does, traveling the country, taking videos of people. You got a meeting, right?
At 10, I do.
On Zoom or what?
Yeah, I got to be on Zoom.
You can do it. You can do it here.
I told him that.
That's what he does.
Yeah,
he
if you guys don't mind.
We'll set you up with a computer. Rob will set you up with a computer
I just need the Wi-Fi.
So, obviously we're getting close to that, but you're living in – can I ask one other question?
Yeah.
You're living in Crown Point. You come back to the region. Mm-hmm. Why?
I love CP. I love CP. Most of my family's here. My parents – My oldest brother still lives here, him and his wife with their kids. My little sister, my other brother lives up in the suburbs north of Chicago. But, my family, we're region through and through. And that's a big part of why I came back. And honestly, that's a big part of why I got out of coaching. It's just because I'm super close with my family. And, you know, throughout my playing days, I missed a lot. You miss, you know, birthdays, weddings, things like that. And I just didn't want to do that again for the next 20, 30 years. So...
I agree with you. Crown Point may be like the best place in Indiana to live.
Yeah.
And it's growing and all that. But I'm glad to see you're back in the region.
For sure.
DeJuan, thanks for letting me come in, man.
Oh, man. Thank you. I've always had a blast. I just got back from Memphis, and Memphis Airport is probably a 0.5-star, even with pre-TSA. You know, you have all these people coming in with luggage and oversized, where I'm like, hey, you know you got to pay extra. I got a 6 a.m. flight, so... That was my day yesterday, and
I didn't think you were gonna make it. So when you texted me last night, I was like, "Hey, man,
I'll come in." Yeah. I took an Uber because I leave my car at the South Shore. You know, we don't have any rules here in Indiana, Chicago. They'll text you.
Exactly. You can leave it there for a week.
Yeah,
Spike, what do you want? You're back in the region. What do you want to tell the region?
What do I want to tell the region?
Yeah, really, we need a clip that we can clip.
That's tough.
In the next 5 years, Spike will be back in the basketball business.
Oh, yes.
No.
You heard it right here on this podcast. No.
I'm going to pitch him. I'm going to throw a lot of different coaches his way because he's a guy that has so much information and knowledge, because you'll get a guy who don't really care about the game and be a head coach.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, man, I can't talk to you. Like, you have no experience. You have no resume. There's a lot of coaches who get opportunities because they just like the game. But you're very passionate. Yeah. But in 5 years, I'm calling it out that he'll be back in the biz.
Yeah, I don't know about coaching. Maybe some sort of business venture on the basketball side.
How about a podcast?
Maybe. I don't know.
We can do that right here.
Yeah.
You have so much information.
We got a studio.
Yeah. He does others. Yeah. So, yeah. But just in general, what would you tell – I agree with DeJuan brought it up. I kind of feel like I'm doing baseball right now. Baseball is really good right now. There's all these D1 guys. The girls' softball is really good. Volleyball is really good. And basketball, boys' basketball, other than Munster and Hammond Central this year, it just seems like the last few years it's kind of declined a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe it has to do with the prep schools or whatever. But what do you tell these – what would you want to tell these kids that are coming up?
In terms of
just
like,
in general, what advice would you give them? You're talking a sophomore who's really good, say playing for one of these schools, Lake Central. What the kids? His dad says, "Hey, Spike, can you talk to this kid? What advice would you give him? What would you say?"
If they're wanting to play in college, I would tell them, because there's a lot of distractions out there and a lot of people in your ear and social media and all this stuff. I would just tell them, focus on getting better. Right, work on your game every day. Don't worry about the Instagram workout videos and, you know, having to like self promote yourself, all of that stuff. Obviously, that's part of it. But if you just focus on getting better every single day, getting stronger, right, the right opportunity will find you. No matter what level, and it doesn't have to be Division I, Division II, Division III. That's great basketball. Look at Duncan Robinson. He played Division III basketball. He got a $90 million contract in the NBA. Just focus on getting better. Put in the time. It's not going to be easy. But if you get a chance to play in college and you get a full scholarship, it's worth it.
It's your podcast.
There you guys have it, the one and only Spike Albrick. Jimmy D'Lo is in the building. So happy to have him here. Talking to Spike, episode 187 on the Duane Morrell podcast. Mike Hackett, either he listens to this and he comes on the podcast next Wednesday, or I will tweet him from all five of my accounts to get his attention.
Love it.
And Mike Hackett, I need him.
I might have a little in on that one, too, if you want to get
it. I want to hear his offense. He runs the Bellarmine, Belmont system
that
style.
That high-low, I am... when it's there, yeah. It looks like the most beautiful offense in the world. But when a guy like Jim East, where he learned it from,
rest in peace,
is able to shut it down, it's tough. But anyways, you want to ask him about the high low.
I want to ask him about his offense, his structure, because when they leave Munster, you know they've been coached. I can't say that for a lot of kids.
I agree.
So there you guys have it until next Wednesday. Stay tuned.
Got the judgment.